Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street. The Werewolf of Dog Street. I almost forgot.
Yeah, it's
Halloween. It's spooky themed. And Tommy, what did I call you last time?
I gave the Prince of Snark Manor. But
that's right. And I gave you the Michael Jackson of Snarkness, which is the scarier version of Prince. And we're joined today, very special guest, Connor Sullivan. How are you, man?
Hey, guys. How are you? Real quick, I just listened to your Jimmy Eat World episode, and there was not a lot of talk of their new album, Surviving.
Yes.
Which I think is a masterpiece.
Oh, really?
I think it's their third best record behind Futures and Bleed American.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, okay.
If you want to do a Patreon episode about it, that could be fun.
Oh, please. Let's do it. Yeah. Let me talk about the deep cuts of Jimmy Eat World's 2019 album forever.
I love it. No, we should definitely do that on the old Patreon, which, by the way, is only $3 a damn month. And there's a discount, 10% off if you do the whole year. That's like $2.70 a damn episode. That's less than gas in some places. Damn.
You know, you get 1 gallon of gas.
Look, and also, just to stay competitive, we will mail you 1 gallon of gas if you get on the Patreon, just so you don't have to flip a coin on which thing to get. But no, we're very excited to have you, Connor. We teased this episode a little bit last week when we talked about Halloween songs with Guy Montgomery, but how can we talk about Halloween songs without talking about the Monster Mash man himself, Bobby Pickett?
He has become one of my biggest obsessions in the world. I think I've heard more Bobby Pickett songs than any other human alive. I've gone like dark web level of digging into his discography.
It's so funny because a lot of Bobby Boris Pickett is someone where I wouldn't have guessed this reaction, where I was like, can you send 6 songs? And you were like, I don't know if I can narrow it down.
Yeah, we've had people who have real bands that they pick on the show, and they're like, yeah, can I just send 4?
Well, I think it's just because, most of the novelty song people from like the 50s and 60s, like Screaming Lord Such, or like the guy that sang the Purple People Eater, I forget off the top of my head, but they didn't really, those songs didn't last. And then the Monster Mash is still the only Halloween song. Like, it was the opening song in Hubie Halloween. Like, it's still, if something is said at Halloween, they will play the Monster Mash.
It is crazy. Yeah, there's no, we did a bunch of Halloween songs for kids. That was our topic last week. But most of them are just like, what if Baby Shark had a ghost in it? You know, there's not like a Halloween song. In the way that Christmas, there's, you know, a million of them. But yeah, Monster Mash is the only one that is that universal. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, it continues to chart every year. Like, it's one of the only songs, I think the Beatles are the only other band that is like like top the Billboard charts as much as Bobby Boris.
It's crazy. I read a thing where it's like he topped like top 100 in 3 different years.
Yes.
And you're not going to believe what time of year that happened around. But I didn't even look, but I have to assume it was around this time. It would be funny if it was just like, fuck it, it's March, let's put on the Monster Mash.
I think that's why his discography is interesting to me, because he would chart in these different decades, and then he would be prompted to record new songs, and then they would always be of different eras of music, and all of them would like fail miserably. like they could barely get on the Dr. Demento show.
Oh, that's hard to do.
Yeah, not easy. Not as easy as it sounds. A lot of our listeners have tried to get on Dr. Demento shows.
Still, the two goals in comedy are SNL and Dr. Demento.
I want to get into the music pretty quickly, but first I think we should cover some Halloween bases. Are you guys doing anything for Halloween? Connor, are you doing anything for Halloween out there?
God, I don't think so. I mean, it seems a little just, I mean, look, every year I've been pretty much doing the same costume, which I dress as Derek Whibley from Sum 41, because he's the only blonde celebrity.
Very fitting for this show. We just did
maybe I'll just be Derek at home and just, you know, watch like acoustic renderings of all Killer No Filler songs.
Hell yeah, that's a good plan. I don't remember if I talked about this last week on the show, but I was just in Indiana where they will be trick-or-treating, which I think is truly insane. Mm-hmm. Was it on that this show that somebody pointed out that it is actually the safest time to be in Indiana because it's the only time everybody will be wearing a mask? I think that might have been. I think that might have been on the stand-up podcast, but it's true. Where it is absolutely true. That reminds me. We didn't get a voicemail from Jared today. I forgot to text him, but I don't know if that he would have any thoughts on this anyway. But I just saw him, and it was a great time at the Comedy Attic. I highly recommend if you want to see comedy, check out their live stream options on comedyattic.com. Or just go. I had a good time. It was fun doing live stand up again, even though it's weird, and it was in a mask, which was interesting. But yeah, it was. It wasn't as bad as it seemed, but it was definitely the safest thing I felt like I've done performing wise, other than just doing Zoom shows. So if you want to see it and want to be safe, get out there. But anyway, Tommy, what are you gonna do? You gonna do anything for Halloween? It's like right? It feels very rushed upon us.
Well, I've been like definitely getting in the mood. I've been watching a lot of horror stuff, which I've been loving. I watched The Shining, rewatched The Shining recently, watched Nightmare on Elm Street, watched Hill House and Bly Manor on Netflix, which I highly recommend. Hill House especially is an amazing horror show. Connor, did you ever watch that?
No, I'm like, my horror genre is horror comedy. Like, I like campy horror more than actual horror. Like, I could watch, you know, Roger Corman stuff all day, but it's not that that's comedy. But
yes,
Like the new jump scare generation is too much for me.
Well, they in the camp realm, I did watch Sleepaway Camp for the first time this year.
Oh yeah,
and that is incredible. That was had me laughing. So that was good.
I'm gonna watch that this week for sure. That's the one that you told me about that's like you were really rolling around.
Yes, it's super funny. I see. Okay. I was rolling around on the floor.
Yeah, you had a seizure, and that's how Tommy
Judge is good. I watched a spooky sounding movie this week, which was the Joshua Jackson movie, The Skulls.
I remember that movie.
It's our friend Joe McAdam said something about on Twitter that there's a scene set to Creed's Higher where a bunch of sexy ladies in slow motion walk towards the camera. So that's pretty much why I watched it, and it did not disappoint. It delivered in that realm. The most 2000 era thing that could happen is using Creed sincerely.
That's so funny. Oh my god. Yeah, I hope I get to do something like some outdoor kind of thing where I can wear a costume, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, Kim Kardashian on a private island.
I think that what she did was really cool, and I'm not biased because I happen to be one of the few people who she did invite. But it was weird that she just kept telling me to quarantine and get tested without telling me what it was for. That would be weird to be one of her friends. She keeps telling you to do shit and you're like, fuck you. Like, how do you know that there's going to be this surprise trip at the end?
You'd maybe be, oh, like she seems to care now. Like, it took a few months, but now she's really being, you know, being savvy. And then it turned into that.
Yeah. I'm like, I keep forgetting that it's almost Halloween because we're in the middle of like, I think we're going to have to move. Like we have a whole thing happening here, including our ceiling is legitimately just falling apart to the point where I'm surprised you guys probably can't hear it now, but it was dripping so bad earlier. It has been for like 2 weeks, and the fucking landlord finally came over and he was like, oh, you should put a towel down. This is going to really damage the wood. I was like, I don't give a fuck about the wood. So mad. But the spookiest thing of all, a binding lease agreement. Yeah.
I had to move two Halloweens ago. I just moved into a new place, and my roommate found black mold in his sink. And they basically, they came in and like, there's no way we can clean all this. We have to basically take apart your apartment.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And then the landlord tried to, they used a fake eviction notice when we said, like, they, it was, it turned into like a lawsuit situation where they tried to blame us for the black mold.
That's what I'm, they tried to do that to us where, there are some flowers on the fucking rooftop that, and like a small little like plants and shit. And they were trying to blame that on for the leak and they weren't going to do anything about it. And then there was a guy here today who was like, yeah, no, it's not even from that part of the roof. It's like a totally different section. And also, why the hell would a flower cause a damn, like the entire roof to rot when it rains? Yeah, exactly. And they got in my girlfriend's head. It's like, yeah, I think that the flooding rain that's happening would have a lot more of an impact than once a week watered plant.
That is like a Shyamalan, how Shyamalan would get out of explaining the haunted house. He's like, it's flowers on the roof.
Isn't that the twist of The Happening?
The Happening is it's the trees. Yeah. The Happening, this is my one Mark Wahlberg impression I do, is Mark Wahlberg in The Happening where he goes, I'm a teacher. I'm trying to help you. That's my one Mark Wahlberg I do.
I also have a Wahlberg in The Happening, which is him as a teacher again, just going like, you guys hear about these bees?
This is mine. If I was around for the happening, nothing would have happened.
There wouldn't have been no happening.
Nothing would have happened if I was there for the happening.
So while we're talking about movies, Connor, you wrote a movie about Bobby Boris Pickett, which is why we're so excited to have you for this episode. I don't think anyone in the world could have done this episode.
So we're very happy to have you. I would be furious if somebody else did and they only sent a one song playlist. But yeah, I did. I wrote a movie. It's called He Did the MASH.
People which can was, read it, right?
If they want to. It's I have a website for it. It's hedidthemash.com. A few years ago, my friend, again, I'll reference him again, Joe McAdam, showed me a clip of a Monster Mash sequel song, which I've included on the playlist that we'll hear in a little bit, and I was stunned by it. It's so shockingly the same song. And then I just fell down a YouTube rabbit hole, and then I found he wrote a memoir 2 years before he died, and it was self-published, and
oh my God,
on Amazon I bought it for like $40. It's now
$40.
There's only one copy left on Amazon and it costs $450.
Oh my God.
And so I bought it just in the sense of like, hey, maybe I'll write a movie about him. And the book is just ramblings, like unedited ramblings about all the women he slept with, not just like celebrities, but like every single woman he slept with. And then for about one page, he talks about the Monster Mash. Like the recording is one page. And the rest of it, there's a whole chapter about how he had sex with Klaus Leachman.
That's so funny. Well, it makes sense that he wouldn't write that much about writing the Monster Mash because he's, I think, quoted to have said, it took him 30 minutes to write the song and 30 minutes to record it.
Him and his co-writer, Lenny Capizzi, they were in a singing quartet, and then they were trying to hit the big time, and then they started to be like, maybe we'll write one of those stupid Halloween songs. Those make a lot of money. And then that's what they did. It's very cynical. Like, that's what they did. They wrote it in 30 minutes, and now it is in every single piece of Halloween content until the end of time.
truly insane that it would be so successful and so shortly thought. And he's like... I'm sure you know a million. I mean, $40 worth more than I do about Bobby Pickett. But it seems like he's very resentful of being categorized as a one-hit wonder, and in fact, claims he's not a one-hit wonder. That he's had two hits and a whole album that's a hit.
Technically, he had comedy hits, which I will play one of the worst ones in a bit. But it's the book is written from the perspective of a man. I think he had just gotten diagnosed with leukemia, which is how he died. And he's kind of coming from like, I always liked it, but you can tell there's so much like pain and resentment and anger because he was only defined by this, you know, stupid thing that he tossed off.
Sure. And he wanted to be an actor. I read a lot about that. And you can see that in him performing for Dick Clark, where it's like, his whole performance is him lip syncing to this thing, but the faces he's making and turning into the monster that he's becoming is the performance. And it's so weird to see him turn around at the end of the performance. He's like, well, that was it. And it's like,
he deliberately would make his face look like that so people would take him seriously as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so he's like, well, this is my persona. Like, he was very deliberate, but like removed from time, it just looks insane. Like, he's the grimace faces that he's making are truly like unsettling.
Yeah. Yes. I read a little bit about him. The craziest thing I read about him, and I found this on his IMDb under trivia. I looked up fun facts, and a lot of the facts were truly just tragic in ways that I'm not even going to get into. But
it was one of the fun facts that his son wandered into the ocean and died.
I'm not exaggerating. Literally, the first fun fact is that, and I would argue, I don't know how fun that fact is.
Again, I would say his son's death gets about as much book time as the Monster Mash recording.
And Cloris Leachman, Manny Cloris Leachman, is like 15 pages.
Hit on Diane Cannon once, and that was 3 pages, but his son's untimely death.
It's insane. Yes, I'm not kidding. I searched Bobby Pickett fun facts. That was the first one. And it's under the, I searched fun facts. This is trivia, though. And that was literally number one. And then the second fact is co-wrote the song Monster Mash. That's number two.
He's more known as Bobby Pickett. Your father. Yeah, but he doesn't know that fact.
Dude. Doesn't know that one. But
he wrote the Monster Mash. Shit, I love that.
Wow. Okay. Give this guy another look-see.
So the craziest fact I found on here, though, I felt was, and I kind of like the editorialism of this, because it says he was, in quotes, found by a daughter and 2 grandchildren he never knew he had in 97, which almost makes it seem like they don't believe these people that they're his daughter and grandchildren. But
the research I did on that, and it is a big part of the book, actually, because I think the most of the book is about his like 80s and 90s era, which is just him working at a golf course. I traced the genealogy of his daughter, and it looks like he was on tour that first year where Monster Mash was like a huge hit, which is, I think, 62 and or 65 rather. But he slept with someone in Seattle, like a groupie, and then she had a kid and didn't want to tell us.
Oh my God.
So it's like some woman that slept with, it's like now it's like if someone had slept with one of the Paul brothers or something. Mysteriously 30 years later, there was a new kid. But yeah, that was like the happy ending he has at the end of his book. And it's at the end of the movie too, because it's like, it's the only thing that seemed to bring him any peace or calm.
And that's even in this. So this is on doyouremember.com. They talk to this daughter, and she even says he was so psyched that they found him because he had no one. Quote. When I found him, he was out of his mind thrilled since he thought he was going to grow old alone. I still remember the night I told my kids that Grandpa is the Monster Mash singer. Tragic line.
And doyouremember.com, that's Earth, Wind, and Fire's site.
That is correct. Yes, paid for by Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Weird side on Bobby Pickett on that Earth, Wind, and Fire site.
For Hughes, his daughter, who changes her ringtone to the Monster Mash every October, the spooky novelty is a proud part of family lore. I get so thrilled about it, I want it to go away. Not because of the money, but I just don't want it to go away because it's so sweet. I don't know that it is that sweet of a song.
No, it's a very dumb, very catchy song. But like, yeah, it's, I guess as a legacy, it's nice that her father hasn't been forgotten, but nobody really knows who Bobby Pickett is, and then the only person that really does is me, and I know what a maniac he is.
All right, we should take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with some music.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're back. We are talking Bobby Boris Pickett today on the show with Connor Sullivan, and I am very excited for us to get into this playlist you've created. I went ahead and listened to all, like, you have a very long playlist attached to that you posted on Twitter recently, and I just went ahead and listened to a lot of the songs, and I had a great time.
Lot of the novelty songs didn't make the cut, like his Star Trek parody Star Drek.
Oh my god.
And then the oddly racist song he did about King Kong, which has some African chants in the middle that he does. I think that one's best we lose that one.
Sure.
To time, but
I mean, I think we have to listen to the Monster Mash just to get it out of the way. Real
sure,
fast.
I refuse to put it on my.
Of
best
course, job. I think that that's. Of course. I do appreciate that, but I feel just for the listener's sanity, we should listen to a little bit of the Monster Mash.
Yes.
For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the Monster Mash.
The Monster Mash.
Okay, you get it. We know the song, and you write that song in 30 minutes, you record it in 30 minutes, and you just watch the cash roll in.
So, also, there's a weird thing that has never been confirmed. It's been confirmed and denied on multiple sites, but that Darlene Love is singing background
yes.
vocals.
Oh, shit.
I was just reading about that very thing. I didn't know that it was not confirmed, though.
No, because I think he says it in the book, and then there are differing Darlene Love interviews where one time she says she didn't, and then another confirms she did. Like, it's one of the most confounding facts. Like, one of the only interesting things about the recording is, like, completely, like, I don't know, maybe?
There's another one here, and I'm sure that this had to have been in the book if it's true, but, and this sort of writing is done a couple times in his, trivia, but his first live performance backup band was a group of young, relatively unknowns called the Beach Boys.
Beach Boys. there's a picture in his book of him like doing his stupid grimace face, and you see Brian Wilson like playing along in the background. And in the book, he's oddly honest that he was a dick to them. Like, so he was funny. Like, it was his one fall of being like a star. And it was like, I think it was like definitely a year or two before Pet Sounds, and like but they were still kind of just a regular LA band, and they were honored to play with him. And he was like, he kind of was like, yeah, whatever, kid. And like, and then later they covered the Monster Mash.
I didn't even know that. That's wild.
I think it was a Mike Love version, so it's why we're not playing it a lot. But Yeah, it's that is confirmed, and the picture. I'll send you guys the picture. It is a horrifyingly sad picture.
There are a couple more of these that are similar, but this one is in the late 70s. On one occasion, his backup band was a very young Van Halen. And then what's the other one here?
That one.
Yeah, sorry, that's all right. I'm back. Yeah, it's unreal or does?
Yeah, I don't know if I've, there's a couple like yeah celebrities playing with him. I that one wasn't confirmed in the book.
That's very interesting. The other one was I think there was one more, but there's two. Bob Dylan was a big fan of his novelty hit, which doesn't that one doesn't even seem like it should be in there.
I don't know how that was discovered.
Oh, I love the Monster
Mash. Someone heard him say that in a coffee shop.
And I remember Ginsberg was dancing.
That's probably why he painted his face white in the Rolling Thunder review. He's like, I want to be like one of those monsters.
The other one is the pianist on Monster Mash is blues legend Leon Russell.
That is true.
Wow.
It's something I couldn't put into the movie because I don't feel like enough people know who Leon Russell is.
Yeah, I don't really know.
But I think it was in a draft and then I was like, I don't think anyone cares.
But yeah, some very fun facts certainly about old Bobby Pickett. Let's hear some of these songs you picked out because I think you did a great job here. And,
right. If you need intro, I can, yes. Give you some context to his career.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So, I had the first one pulled up here. Okay. So I'm assuming you want these in, the order seemed very important when listening to the
yes. list, so it's my, the best mixtape I've ever made. For 2 years, he kind of rode on the success of Monster Mash, and then, as we'll see a little later, he was trying to expand into different directions, so he was kind of reticent to revisit it. So by the time he did revisit it, it was 1965, 66, and it was too late to kind of keep the momentum going in a, say, Chubby Checker, Let's Twist Again sort of way. So he and Capizzi reunited to record the Monster Swim.
Yes.
And if you think it sounds a little like a song you've heard before, you might be right.
All right, let's hear the Monster Swim.
The Crypt Kickers and I brought the Monster Mash to you, but now it's a different bag, and mashing is a drag. When the lights grow dim, we now do the Monster Swim. All you would-be monsters, come on in. Boris is going to show you how to Monster Swim.
I love the horn. But here we go.
It's something like the zombie, but not so slow. A lot like the grave digger, but not so low. We can't do the monkey or even the dog, cause they've both been eaten by the blob.
We do the swim.
It's a poolside smack. It's bigger than the man.
I love calling your shot.
Actively boasts that it's a better song.
It's bigger than the man.
Clearly is not.
And so there's a performance on American Bandstand of the Monster Swim, which is what made me fall in love with Bobby, is Dick Clark, who apparently hated Bobby Pickett and the Monster Mash, which is mentioned multiple times in the book, and I made it a recurring theme in my script. But Bobby, it's the most flop sweat performance because nobody cares. Like, it's like nobody wanted a sequel to the Monster Mash. Nobody cared. And then there's this weird like octopus monster puppet behind him that like I guess kind of moves, but it is you can see him trying so hard to make this happen and nobody cares. It's all these like teens in like weird plasticky Halloween costumes just looking bored, and it's like you're watching a career die like in real time. It's really crazy.
I really love the move of putting within your song that it's bigger than your hit song.
It's like, so funny.
It's such a bold move.
it's yeah, this I think he said, yeah, the last line is him doing a Bela Lugosi and he says, "The swim is a gas. It's better than the
match." That's so
like good. It's a last reminder that it's like, remember, this is a better song.
That is great. that is so good. All right, yeah, that's the beat. So clearly he was very influenced by the dances at the time when he made the mat. He made that's why it's the mash. It's because yes. of the mashed potato. And then yeah, he just thought that he could keep it, whatever the new thing was, and we see that throughout. His collection that he yes. keeps trying to update, but
there's one I didn't get on here, but it's called Monster Man Jam, which is which was a 70s Woodstock themed one.
Oh my god!
And it's I think it's just him like saying like groovy, like it's like it's not the same song style. It's like it's they wrote a different song finally, but it's just a disaster.
It's so funny to picture like while he's doing all this, like also. Everything of the late 60s is happening.
Yes. Yeah, Vietnam is happening.
He's just like how did the, fuck?
The monsters are. I think at some point he says, like, Igor Hendrix. You're like, that's it? That's all you have?
It would be funny if he tried to make like a hippie version of it where he's like, and the monsters are the government.
Oh, he's like actively trying. Well, as you'll see, that he does get political in his yes, final recording.
Yes. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but the final one is so good. But the next one is this song, Me and My Mummy.
Yes. So this is, I put this one on. This is a. Album track because he only technically released one album, the Monster Mash original record.
Mm-hmm.
And they clearly had to shit out like 10 other monster songs and they barely get through it. Like one of them is just an instrumental that he kind of makes monster noises over called Monster Mash Party. But Me and My Mummy is the kind of song where I'm like, I kind of like Me and My Mummy. Like if it came on shuffle, I probably would not turn it off. And he does a couple, there's a couple of vocal trill things he does that I kind of like, that's kind of charming. And so Me and My Mummy, he also tried to record multiple times to make a hit and it never stuck. But as a second single, I'm a one hit wonder obsessed second single guy. It's nice to hear what could have been if he could have made this a hit.
All right, let's hear Me and My Mummy.
I love that. With this hideous sight, how could it happen?
How could it be? It's just me and my mommy. My mommy and me. It happened in Egypt by the old River Nile. Where at the base of a pyramid. I'll say it. I think that's a better song than the Monster Mash.
It's definitely a better song. Like it's not as catchy. It's catchy, right. Obviously. But I think the reason I like Mash and Me and My Mummy so much is they're just kind of really basic 60s pop
yes,
song structures.
For sure. Yeah.
And they're well produced. Like
sounds good, yeah.
Yeah, it's Gary Paxton who also produced the Monster Mash, and he had his own one hit wonder in the 50s called Alley Oop. Which
yes, I listened to Alley Oop today because it's on your other playlist.
Alley Oop is crazy, and it's a song that Bowie quotes in Life on Mars. Look at those cavemen go is from Alley Oop, which is song about a comic book caveman. but he was a really good producer, and that record like I own the actual LP and it sounds really good. Even like the really tossed off stuff sounds good and has like really lush pop like instrumentation.
No, that felt like I was on makeout point, just just having a nice time. I really enjoyed that one.
I think singers were so dumb sounding in the 60s that that could have just been a normal hit. Like, if it wasn't about decayed flesh, you'd just be like, yeah, okay.
That is, it's like an old 60s parent who's stuck in the 50s is like, why are you listening to Hendrix? Listen to Mummy and Me. This is good Christian fun.
All right. The next song we have on this playlist is called Gotta Leave This Town.
Oh, boy. Okay. So in the late 60s, Bobby decided to try and pursue sincere songwriting and performing. So he recorded a series of songs that were 100% just not novelty songs. One of them was called Graduation Day, which is a really bad, lame, like four freshmen type song. But this one, he is going for it. He is this is a ballad about a guy trying to leave his small town and become something big, which was his life story because he came from near me, Somerville, Massachusetts. This is definitely a song that he's trying to present who the real Bobby Pickett is. And oh boy, his voice just doesn't work.
Yep.
For what it is. Yep.
Let's hear Gotta Leave This Town.
Gotta leave this town before the sun goes down. Gotta find my place. Gotta win the race.
It's gotta leave this town.
The lyrics which Bobby wrote,
they're so bad.
The line "my back is wet" is so crazy to me.
It's great. It's so visceral of a feeling too. I mean, I think that's just good songwriting, frankly.
You can see him with like clenched fists at the mic, like giving it his all. Like, this is the thing that makes me go from a joke to, you know, a star.
Yeah.
And his voice is just so unappetizing.
I listened to that graduation song earlier too, because that's not on this playlist, right? That's
I think it's on the bigger playlist.
Yes.
I only chose one sincere Bobby song.
I'm so excited for the last three songs here too. this is a great playlist. But no, graduation, I was like, man, this just doesn't work. Like, no, who would want to hear this when they're graduating? It sucks.
So there was, apparently it was on a jukebox in a bar in Los Angeles. Also, Bobby Pickett, humongous drunk.
Sure.
I think it goes without saying, but most of his stories were about, he would kind of wait for people to play Graduation Day and like, kind of like he would try and make like, oh, I kind of recorded this thing and nobody ever played it.
No.
Or like one time someone did and they're like, what's this shit? Like,
that's
but yeah,
so
this
funny.
Is like, this is the first dark era in Bobby's. This is before the MASH became a perennial favorite. So it's definitely him like just struggling to keep afloat. And like also, he recorded the Monster Mash when he was like 24.
Yes.
And he was really young. And so by that, he was washed up by 30, like a one hit wonder washed up at 30, which it's like insane to think about, especially just because he's been singing in an old man voice for his whole life. But yeah, this is, I am so obsessed with Gotta Leave This Town. I tried to buy a 45 of it and it like, it was too much money.
We have to play this next song. It is called Godfather's Respect He.
Right. So real quick, what happens in the 70s with Bobby is the Monster Mash becomes a hit, a number one hit again. And It's sort of like in that Tommy Wiseau making The Room and then deciding it was a comedy. Mm-hmm. Bobby Pickett decided he was always funny. Mm-hmm. And so he was going to pursue a career in novelty songs and comedy and pursue some of his other voices that he could do. And so this one is his Marlon Brando impression.
And you'll hear it's right on the money. Here's Godfather's Respecti.
Ah, here's where the reception's gonna be, Godfather.
The wedding of my daughter. That bum. Luca, will I have time to rehearse this tune before the reception?
Yes, Godfather, if we hurry.
Excellent, Luca. I'd like to thank Frankie the Python and his musical mob for performing a small service for me.
Here's your microphone, Godfather, when you're ready.
Yeah. What you want? Baby, I got it. What you need? You know I have it. All I ask is for a little respect.
It's unbelievable.
It sounds like it's so crazy to me because he sounds nothing like Marlon Brando.
No, I was trying to put my finger on what he sounded like, and Tommy, you'll know this because you like Sharpling Show. He sounds like Gary the Squirrel. He sounds so much like Gary the Squirrel.
Yeah, so he had a bunch of character-y songs like this that I have every single one of, and they're all like the kind of comedy that comes from somebody in sales that takes an improv class, my friends think I'm funny. Like he's like, hey, here's my hippie guy. He's funny. Like that's the exact tone of everything. And yeah, this is like the most frat boy comedy kind of like, I don't know. This thing's kind of funny. We'll do it at the show. And it's all just a nightmare.
It's so bad.
The Luca Brasi little skit that opened. So painful to listen to. It's so grating.
That's what all of his novelty songs in the 70s were like, here's him doing like John Wayne. And here's the Star Drek, which I can't recommend. It's 5 minutes of a bad sketch where it's like, what is it, Snotty instead of Scotty?
It's Mad Magazine.
It's basically Mad Magazine type stuff. And then again, the King Kong one, we'll try and erase. But it's crazy. And then also, none of this hits. Like it's another decade of, okay, now I get it. I'm a joke. And then nothing hits again. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it just keeps happening to him over and over again, where he doesn't understand that nobody wants anything else from him.
Well, it's also weird that he went from, I mean, Monster Mash was an original composition.
Yeah.
Yes. And then in this one, he managed to, I'm sure, upset two camps of people by ruining both a great movie and a great song.
Right.
Yeah.
Swoop. Like,
well, I know of about, 38 people watched this YouTube video and two people gave it thumbs up. So
it was secret granddaughter and wife or whatever.
The Otis Redding estate liked it. Like, this was what he was going for.
I'm just saying, if you hear two knocks upon your door, Tommy, I wouldn't open that thing up.
Two distinct knocks, each from a separate hand.
Yeah, of course, yes. They will be together.
But I recognize those thumbs. They were up on that video.
All right, this is where things really start to take a modern turn, because we have Monster Rap is the...
Yes, so in the 80s, the Monster Mash became... a big again, and it became a staple on the Dr. Demento show. You know, he finally achieved his comedy dreams. And so again, they try and modernize his hits. There's one that I really like. It's a rock version called It's Alive, where he gives birth to a son who doesn't wander into the ocean and die. he has a new, like, evil mad scientist son, who creates a monster that can really shred on guitar. That one's I really like it. Like, I genuinely think it's good. But the version that just strikes out so hard is this monster rap, which you might have to fast forward a bit so you can get the full Frankenstein rap. But you should start at the beginning.
Yeah, we'll listen to the opening and then I'll skip forward a bit. So this is monster rap.
Same coffin opening. Sounds the same. Yeah, there's some real rapping. So belabored, like it's so like I believe the monster rap is 4 minutes long.
It's very long. West and south, I'm the cat they call Monster Mouth. When I party rap, I control the room. I can get the werewolves howling at the moon. You see, I'm big and bad, scarred and mean. I'm the cool rain child of Dr. Frankenstein. I said a rap, bap, another zap. Can't stop the rapping now. Yeah, that.
Now I'm 99% sure that's a different person rapping. Like, I think he always had a different comedy partner to do this stuff with, and it was always someone that was somehow worse than him. But like, what a odd, like, I'm trying to think of, like, imagine if, like, I don't know, it's weird because, like, Weird Al does it successfully of going, you know, decade by decade and not looking pathetic, but like, just I can't even think of, there's no one like him, I guess.
Yeah. funny that he calls the hunchback a fool, and then when the zombies start rapping, they're also fools.
Right.
Everyone's a damn fool.
I think the closest you could get to something this bad is when Brian Wilson rapped in the 80s, like that song Smart Girls, that I think his that was the album that his evil doctor Eugene Gandhi.
Oh, yes.
But it's that kind of like weird white boomer like rapping. Like, now this is what the kids do. Yeah. And it's weird because this again is a colossal whiff that few people know about, but it is one of the only Bobby Pickett songs on Spotify.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
This one has a lot more support. A lot of people in the comments on YouTube are saying they genuinely love it and that they think it's better than the Monster Mash. And
that's bullshit.
I know. Scott Thomas says, very hilarious second follow to Monster Mash. I don't know.
Second,
about that.
It was like the 80s.
Oh, he wrote that with two different accounts too. With slightly different wording. It was great second follow up to Monster Mash, and then he also wrote very hilarious. Wait,
we
that was
check the Discogs.
This is 3 days
if, like,
ago.
He was the bass player.
Yeah, he definitely seems to be affiliated in some capacity.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. It's. I mean, there are club mixes of Monster Rap. Like they did try. In the book, he says Elvira made a lot of like 80s rock CD, like 80s Halloween compilations, and they could never get the rights to it for some reason, which is like very bizarre. But this one just languished, not even a video or anything, like just it's a shame.
So we have one more song. I want to take a quick break because we've saved the best for last. This last song I couldn't believe was real. We'll be right back with more Stand By Your Band. All right, we are back to hear our final song and then go to Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff. But this last song is called Climate Mash.
Yes. So the only thing is, I think the video makes it even better because it's like 2004 era Flash, and there's like pesky George W. Bush like Flash guys. But he was recruited by some team to record this, so he didn't write it, but according to the book, he did believe in the message.
Oh, that's good.
But this is his very last known recording as a recording artist. I was around 2004, 2005. And it's a little politically pointed.
Yes. We might post this video on YouTube just to, because it is, we'll see. I'm going to like play the thing and put this up to the screen though and see if that
Please.
Works. All right. So this is Climate Mash.
Hiking past the White House late one night, when our eyes beheld an eerie sight. The president appeared with folks very strange, the zombies and vampires of global climate change. It's not global warming, say oil company disciples. Our math tells us it's natural weather cycles. These claims from industry heavies, let the president rest behind his own protective levees. They're doing the climate mash. Real science is bad. Solutions are tried, and they do it for the cash. The creatures were having fun. Our Congress was overrun. We couldn't tell the mindless zombies from the elected ones.
very politically pointed. It's so funny.
And the video is like, again, it's Dick Cheney in like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre outfit drinking a gallon of oil.
It's the animation is like the same. It's the same thing as when South Park would have Saddam Hussein
yeah.
in hell.
Yes,
it looks like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
That, like just the flapping of a picture.
To, yes.
Yeah. It's God. There's one about budget things called the Monster Slash. That's not, it's the same, obviously, surprisingly the same rhythm, but not as fun as him like doing an anti-George W. Bush slash. Like, I can't believe this wasn't on Rock Against Bush.
Yeah. Oh my God, that'd be so good. I love that. I'm glad that he agreed. It'd be so funny if he's like, yeah, I recorded this thing and it really pissed me off. Like, I needed the money. But it's good that he at least liked it, I guess.
I think he does make some points near the end where he, like, Bobby Pickett would have voted for Trump. There's no doubt. Like, he's very, like, libertarian, like... Mm. These people are taking my money kind of thing. So I think he was just convinced in his old age, probably by his like daughter, to say like, hey, maybe. I don't know. I didn't put this in the movie, but there should be a dramatic scene, like a West Wing type scene, like whether or not he should record the climate. But it is in the movie. I put it in the movie. It's like his like the last concert he gives is right after he records the climate.
Did he play shows this late? Like he would actually.
Right up until the end. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. There's footage of him 6 months before he died. He would just play Halloween conventions and state fairs and stuff. And he had like some very sweet patter that he just would do over and over again. Like he had a joke of like, I'll play a medley of my hit. And then like the politest like titters. But then he had a joke he would do it every time. And then as soon as he finished the joke, he would point to the drummer and they would play where he would say like, this is a song that Elvis Presley, the king himself, called the worst thing he ever heard, which is true. And then And then he would just say, but if you're out there, Elvis, I'm still here. And then the drums would hit. And honestly, I would lose my mind. Like, if I got to see that, I would start screaming.
Just mocking a dead man for not liking you.
He's so much better. He's so much better at music than why am I still alive?
As we know, all the greatest musicians are still alive.
All right. Let's go to Facebook and all that good stuff before we wrap up here. Or first we should go to Patreon, where I've started posting on there, and people who post comments get first dibs to get their shit read on the show. So Matthew Potter writes, he's the most narrow one hit wonder, with this with his one hit being his Dracula impression. Yep. Dan Clark writes, the Crypt Kicker 5 is the most disrespected band since the Pips.
Amen. Amen.
True. Anthony Tiberio says, you have to applaud his dedication to the holiday. Has a hit in 1962 and then is still hustling in the 80s when he decides to venture into rap. It's a shame that he turned into a graveyard smash himself, or else who knows what 2020 might have brought. You could have fixed it, Pickett.
It would be like Elizabeth Warren gets one line, and then Mayor Pete gets another line, like the Tenacious D one.
So that is the Patreon. Let's go to Facebook, where we get some more. We're all spread out now. I also did Twitter. Tommy, if you want to pick up or see if anybody
responded to tweets.
Yeah, I'll go to Twitter. Okay, I don't know if anybody did or not. I said we're talking about Bobby Boris Pickett today on the podcast. If you got thoughts, Joe Fernandez writes, Monster Mash is best Halloween song of all time, even more than Thriller.
It's true.
Fair enough. Yeah, I like it. Let's see. Pat Sievert writes, Monster Swim is pretty good too, and his later in life song about climate change is a fun epilogue to his life and career. Yep. Well, I think you're going to be a fan favorite here, Connor, because you've covered every base that they wanted you to. Brandon Kirkman writes, hi, I'm back with the fact that he died at the age of 69. Nice. And he probably died an early death from the mental anguish of performing monster rap. And
the correct answer was no, it was leukemia.
Yeah, if you wanted the correct answer. He also commented, he goes, shout out to Miney in the Monster Rap YouTube comments, who writes, Frankenstein's got better flow than Drake.
Ooh.
Shots fired. Tommy, do we have anything on Twitter?
There's a few on the Twitter. The problem with the Twitter is you always have to read up the usernames and the real names.
Yes.
But so yeah, the mayor of Nellyville wrote, Monster Mash always makes me think of that Simpsons episode where he plays it on Valentine's Day, which is very funny.
Yes. Oh yeah.
One guy said, if you're going to dive into the deeper side of Boris, like songs, give riboflavin flavored non-carbonated polyunsaturated blood a listen. So that must be a different Halloween novelty song.
I don't know that one actually. And again, I'm someone that is always preaching how great Screaming Lord Sutch as She's Fallen in Love with the Monster Man.
That's a couple more. His parody Scully Gully of Holy Gully. Do you know that one?
Gully Gully is on the Monster Mash LP. I didn't know it was a parody. I just thought it was a bad song.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So apparently, yeah, he said it's perhaps an inspiration to Steve Martin's King Tut, to say nothing of a certain Weird Al.
It does sound very similar to King Tut, yes.
And then Brad Keeler, not related to Bobby Boris Pickett, says, nope, but I was listening to the show in the bathroom at work, and I thought my headphones were connected, and loudly in the stall you just heard, welcome back, piss freaks. Which is very funny.
That's great. I like the idea that he's in the bathroom, so it sounds like he's listening to a podcast that like teaches you how to piss or something. all right. Great comments, everybody. And wow, this has been such a fun episode. I want to read one quick quote from Bobby Pickett before we fully wrap this up. There's only one personal quote on his IMDb biography page, and it's from a 1996 interview in People magazine about his 1962 hit Monster Mash. He says, when I hear it, I hear a cash register ringing. And I think that's an apt goodbye to Bobby Pickett. But Connor, do you have you now have the floor for a final statement about Bobby before we rate the playlist and get out of here.
Well, I just think the thing that's so crazy about him is, like, if this had happened today, he probably would have had a nice career. Like, I think people capitalize on one-hit wonder novelty stuff a lot faster and easier. But there's just something so crazy about this, dumb little cynical 30-minute creation that is every Halloween thing I've seen in the last 10 years has it. Like, Love, Simon has a scene set at Halloween, and it's him with the Monster Mash playing. Like, this just – it's so crazy how we've just accepted it as, like, the national anthem of Halloween, and how – I guess something like Thriller comes close, but really there's no topping it. And every song that tries to top it references it. Like, my personal favorite, the Crypt Keeper's New Jack Swing single, The Crypt Jam. I don't know if you guys have heard that, but they reference Monster Mash in it like 4 times. And it's like, yeah, of course, it's, you can't get rid of your influences here. Mm-hmm. But I just think it's so crazy that there's no song that will ever come as close to being like 100% Halloween related, like the Monster Mash.
Well put. And I think you make a good point about how he would do in 2020, because I think if Bobby Pickett was 24 in 2020, he would be a TikTok star. I truly think he would thrive in that medium, and I'm not even kidding. I think he was born in the wrong generation, perhaps, but
his cameo would blow up. Yes. Like, people would be buying Bobby Bar's figure cameos every fucking hour.
Absolutely. So it's time for us to review this playlist, and I'm going to say it right now. We do this out of 6. I find it only proper to give this a 66 out of 6, the spookiest rating of all. Tommy, what do you think?
I'm going to go with a 5 out of 6.
Oh, is that right?
First of all, 4 of those are for Monster Mash in its various costumes.
Sure, sure. And you don't believe that climate change is real, so you take 1 point off.
No, Mummy and Me, I really enjoy. And I think Leave This Town is, I love that you put it on because it's very funny to talk about, but it is hard to listen to. Yeah.
It is a slog of a 3 minutes.
All right, that will do it for this week's episode. Connor, is there anything you'd like to promote?
Well, I mean, it's the season, but so if you're interested in reading more about Bobby Pickett, you could either go to your local library or you can go to HeDidTheMash.com and read the full story of Bobby Boris Pickett and his other I didn't even get to the point that he was a groundskeeper in a nudist colony where he had sex with a lot of people. There's a lot of weird Bobby Boris Pickett stories that I didn't get to here. So if you want to read them all, you can go to HeDidTheMash.com.
Hell yeah. And Tommy?
Well, since we're talking novelty songs written during tumultuous periods of history, I have a full EP of novelty Christmas songs. I recorded one. I had so much fun doing it. I'm going back to the studio to record 3 more. So there'll be at least 4 songs. I'm going to put that out the day after Thanksgiving, so be on the lookout for that.
Very exciting stuff. And get on the Patreon. That's patreon.com/standbyyourband. And, get on the Twitter, all that good stuff. I think I'm going to start posting these on YouTube also if you want to see our little faces while we record this thing. So get on there. And thanks so much, Connor. And obviously, thank you, Tommy. I miss you. Miss you so much. All right. I miss you so fucking much. You're always in the studio now recording holiday songs. No time for old Tom. All right. We'll see you next week. Keep it crispy. Bye.